A sex predator on the run, a double fatal crash in Perth South, and it's Federal Budget Day. It's Tuesday, the 9th of May.
The West Live with Matt Tinney and Ben O'Shea.
G'day, Matty.
G'day, mate. Happy Tuesday.
Yeah, Taco Tuesday for those who celebrate. Day.
Oh, yeah, that too.
We'll find out whether or not the federal government is going to give us any money for tacos. We'll see. We'll talk about that in a little bit. But first, we need to discuss this fatal crash that's happened in Secret Harbour yesterday, late yesterday afternoon. Hate to see it. What's the news?
Yeah, this is an awful crash. So two men have been killed and two children have been injured after a motorbike speared into a ute. This happened in Secret Harbour on Warmbra Avenue. What's happened is that the motorbike has T-boned the ute. The 20-year-old motorcyclist has died at the crash site. So too has the 32-year-old driver of the ute. Two kids in the ute survived this crash, and the ute ended up on its side. A 12-year-old girl and a 4-year-old boy, they've both been taken to Perth Children's Hospital, and we're told they have minor injuries. At the moment, Major Crash Police are investigating, and they want to hear from anybody who saw this crash or anybody who has information about this crash. At this stage, they're investigating whether speed was a factor.
Gosh, you can only imagine how much force must have been involved in that impact if it's flipped.
To turn it on its side. Yeah. And it's been a direct hit on the ute driver's door, which is why the ute driver has been killed in this crash. Because often when you see a motorbike and a car involved in a crash, it's the motorbike rider who comes off worse.
But a 4-year-old
kid in the car as well. Just awful, awful. Two families whose lives have been shattered this morning.
Yeah, it's sad. Definitely sad to see. And now police are on the lookout for a sex predator who was out on parole and now his whereabouts are unknown.
Yes, this sex predator by the name of Kiernan Donnelly has vanished. Now, he was on parole over the rape of a woman he dragged from a Bunbury Oval and attacked in nearby bushes. So, you know, a violent bloke. He was jailed in 2018 after a DNA breakthrough in a cold case review. A jury found him guilty, and the 60-year-old was released on a supervised parole order after serving the minimum amount of time behind bars. Well, now his parole has been cancelled because his whereabouts are unknown.
It's a bit of a worry.
Where has he gone? How have they lost him?
Yeah. Maybe they should have kept him in jail a bit longer, I think. Instead of giving the minimum sentence.
Yeah.
So I guess keep an eye out on the various social spaces.
Kiernan Donnelly is his name.
Thewest.com.au to find all the information about that. Keep your eyes open. We're going to be talking a lot about the cost of living today.
The cozy lives.
Because of the federal budget being announced, there's going to be a big package to address cost of living. We'll hear about it again later this week with the WA budget. And there's going to be a rally to raise awareness about it.
Yes. So union workers and members of the public will be marching today from Solidarity Park in West Perth to the Reserve Bank building on the terrace in the city. So the Reserve Bank obviously being chosen because of the interest rate hikes. That will happen at midday today, only hours before the federal budget is handed down. I mean, you'd have to be living under a rock to not know that people are struggling right now. Putting food on the table is a struggle. Paying rent is a struggle. Paying a mortgage is a struggle for many people. They'll be hoping to see some relief flow into their household budgets tonight.
Yeah, the cost of rents, you can't even afford to live under a rock these days.
Yeah, true.
You mentioned the federal budget. It's going to be announced today. Federal Treasurer Jim Chalmers is going to get up with his budget speech. We've already had our biggest spoiler yet overnight, the first budget surplus in 15 years. The budget's expected to show a weather-thin $4 billion surplus. $4 billion sounds like a lot, but in federal budget terms, it goes pretty quick. And that's the current financial year, and then a $100 billion improvement over the next 4 years compared with the projections even 6 months ago. The massive turnaround comes from a combination of higher than expected employment, wages growth, haven't seen much of that, commodity prices.
And, just a note to those upstairs.
and company taxes. So there's to put that in perspective, the last time there was a budget surplus, 2008, Kay Rudd was in charge. It was the first budget of the Kevin Rudd government under Treasurer Wayne Swan. Remember Wayne Swan?
Yeah, yeah.
We haven't seen one since. The GFC back then kind of stuffed things up for a few years, so there wasn't really much going on when it comes to surpluses. Obama had just been elected, the first black US president, or was about to be. The Dark Knight with Heath Ledger was the highest grossing film.
Wow,
and the first ever 3G iPhone was released.
Oh.
That's how long ago it's been since Australia's had a budget surplus.
You know what's interesting is because usually when you get to federal elections, it's the Liberal Party who is, you know, campaigning on their financial prowess. And here we have a Labor government.
Yeah, I know.
You're referring to with Wayne Swan and once again another Labor government delivering a surplus.
Yeah, well, and the interesting thing for me is how you kind of like, you consider these types of things, right? So we get a surplus, that's great for the economy, the financial position of Australia. But when a lot of people are doing it tough and the government's got heaps of money, I don't know. It's the sort of thing that we saw for a long time under the Howard government. Remember they had those surpluses, were banging on about surpluses. And there were a lot of people that were really struggling.
Howard Costello. Yeah.
Costello. Yeah, 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 indeed.
But this is the thing, though. They've got to balance it, don't they, with inflation at the moment.
That's right.
So you can't flood the economy with money because we're just going to be in more strife later on down the track.
Yeah, economist Matt Tinney. You heard it first. And now we've been talking
Dad's an accountant, so it runs through my veins.
We've been talking a bit about this civil trial against former President Donald Trump over in New York. And now the jury are going to deliberate in that trial after hearing the closing arguments. The lawyer for the writer who's accused Donald Trump of rape and defamation in this civil trial has urged a jury to hold the ex-president liable for the alleged assault. E. Jean Carroll's lawyer said overnight, no one, not even a former president, is above the law. But in closing remarks, Mr. Trump's legal team has accused E. Jean Carroll of bringing a false claim. So Ms. Carroll alleges that Trump raped her in a New York department store in the mid-1990s. He denies it categorically. The 9-member jury will start considering those arguments as of today. Trump's lawyer, this was interesting, argued that Carroll's story was ripped from the pages of Law and Order SVU, referencing a 2012 episode of the crime show in which a woman was raped in the lingerie department of a Bergdorf Goodman store in New York, which is kind of similar to what she's alleged. And she acknowledged that, yes, the alleged assault occurred in the same place as the episode, which was released before she came forward with her allegation in 2019. She says, just a coincidence.
It's interesting, isn't it? So obviously, the jury's going to deliberate, and then if they find Donald Trump guilty, then they'll deliberate a little bit longer because they need to work out a penalty.
Yeah,
and, of course, it's a civil trial. It's not a criminal trial.
Yeah, in America, those penalties get pretty high.
Yeah.
So we'll see.
Interesting,
where that
though,
unfolds.
The turn of events on the Law and Order SVU side of things.
I know. Interesting. It's going to be an interesting little look at what people think of Donald Trump these days, depending on how that jury finds in that case. And now, this is something that's probably below the radar for a lot of people, but ethnic violence has reportedly killed at least 54 people in the remote Indian state of Manipur in recent times. About 23,000 people have fled the unrest, which is really getting to be quite a considerable humanitarian issue. The violence erupted last week in the hilly northeast state, which is bordering Myanmar. The latest clashes erupted between the majority Mai Thai people, who are mostly Hindu and live around the state capital Imphal, and the mainly Christian Kuki tribe of the hills. This has erupted over plans to give the Mai Thai a scheduled tribe status, which is kind of an affirmative action in India, which would mean they get guaranteed quotas in government jobs and college admissions.
Okay.
And so there's been some protests around that and some reprisal attacks. And now the military has deployed thousands of troops in the area. And this is worrying. Shoot at sight orders. So, which is a bit scary.
What's that just mean?
So that means if they see someone protest, they just shoot them. Shoot them on sight. Shoot them dead. That's in extreme cases, but we'll see how that's imposed. Curfews, and they've cut the internet in the region to try and prevent people gathering, I guess, and mobilising. So worrying indeed, and we'll wait and see how that unfolds. And now this story is a bizarre one. So in the conflict in Ukraine, Russia is now literally sending museum pieces into war. So we know they've faced heavy losses. The Ukrainians have been protecting their territory at all costs and really driving the Russians back. And now the Russians have turned to employing T-55 tanks. They've had to pull them out of mothballs. The model was first commissioned by the Soviet Union's Red Army in 1948. They're so old.
So they're sending like museum pieces.
They're so old you can actually find them in museums around the world. The T-55 became the most widely produced tank in the world. More than 100,000 units were built. It was cheap. It was reliable. They've been used everywhere from Russia, obviously, to Egypt, China, Sudan. Some of those countries in Africa, they're still in use because they're very easy. Like, you don't need to give tank operators much training. Just throw them in there.
It's just like driving my I-30.
Basically, it's like driving... probably easier than an I-30. It would certainly have less computer processing power. And you might remember the T-55s. They were the ones used by the Iraqi army in the Gulf War.
Yeah, I'm just looking at the pictures and now they look familiar.
Yeah, very, very old. And So back then in the Gulf War, there were all those stories of the very, very technologically advanced American and British tanks. Like, one tank would like knock out 50 Iraqi T-55s in a day. Like, they'd be knocking them off from 20 kilometres away with, you know, sort of guided missiles. And so it was just, you know, the scenes of these T-55 tanks just smoking in the desert. And so now the Russians...
So why are the Russians sending them in? Have they run out of other tanks?
Out of other tanks. Because it's not easy to just build tanks. Like, if you lose a whole bunch of tanks, you can't just go, okay, let's just...
It's not a quick build at all.
It's
not a 3D printer job.
No. So they've... And the thing about the Russians, apparently, is they don't throw stuff away. So when they're
hoarders.
When these equipment becomes redundant, they just put them into storage. You never know when you might need them. They're hoarders. And so now they're bringing them out, dusting them off, sending them to the front lines, apparently. But experts say not such a bad idea because they've lost so many troops. They don't have a lot of highly trained soldiers to run the technologically advanced tanks. These T-55s, easy, anybody jumps in. And you can also, one use for them is you just dig a big hole, stick the tank in the hole, and then you've got a cannon, right, that you can use for a defensive position.
Wow.
Yeah, there you go. There's some news for you.
Okay, so what's Ukraine's response to all of this? Well, we haven't heard yet.
I think they're probably laughing because they're getting a whole bunch of new tanks from Germany that will just knock off these T-55s pretty easily. So good news for the Ukrainians, I think. Sport. Now, did you enjoy that Giro d'Italia news yesterday?
I loved it. Have you got more?
I got more.
Oh, great.
What's happening at the moment, so we might do a bit more Giro d'Italia news, especially if Australians are doing well.
Can we follow it through?
Yeah. Mm. Well, we might have to because Australian rider Michael Matthews has won the third stage. To put that in perspective for people who don't know cycling, these big races, these big grand tours are made up of multiple stages, and each stage, maybe about 200 kilometres. This particular one, 213 kilometres from Vasto to Melfi in Italy's south. And if you win a stage, you're basically set for life as a professional rider. Like, it puts you on the map. You get sponsors. You get to ride in a big team. Like, it's a big deal if you win one stage.
A bit like if you get a podcast in this building.
Indeed. Exactly the same. It's almost like winning a Grand Prix, you know what I mean? Like,
getcha.
In F1. Like, it's a big deal. And so he won an uphill sprint, which is always pretty tough, after the punishing third stage. And so the 32-year-old, it's the first time he's won a stage at the Giro in 8 years. He beat in the sprint former world champion Mads Pedersen, pretty good result. And Caden Groves, the sprinter from Australia, who was accused of causing the big pile-up in stage two that we spoke about yesterday, he came third again. So that's consecutive third-place finishes for Caden Groves. And Matthews also won stage 14 of the Tour de France last year. So, you know, very, very handy on the pushy. But it's a great win for him because he had COVID earlier this year. He had a big crash in the Tour of Flanders, probably wasn't even going to ride in the Giro. It was a late call-up for his team. So that's really great to see for Matthews. And reigning world champion Remco Evenepoel, who was the one who accused Caden Groves of cheating, he's retained the pink leader's jersey. I found out what that's called.
Yeah.
The Maglia Rossa.
Maglia Rossa.
Oh, God damn it. What?
Maglia.
Maglia Rossa.
Yeah, if you get a G and an L together, it makes that...
Oh, like Puglia. Puglia,
same. Puglia. Same thing.
Oh, yeah, of course. I should have known that.
Yeah.
Ah, well, there you go. The Wild West. Well, make up for my dodgy Italian pronunciation. Guess what I got for you?
Oh, have you got panda news?
Panda news, baby. Got some panda news.
Only one day it has taken you to bring the panda news.
Exactly. I'm a serious journalist, mate. You think it's going to take me longer than that to find some panda news?
Wow.
Do you remember last time we spoke about pandas, we talked about McGowan hoping to secure these direct flights to the Sichuan province.
That's right, the quokka and the panda.
Yes. You go to Chengdu, you check out all the pandas. Western Australians are going to be keen to do that.
Yep.
Remains to be seen if that is true. But one thing I can tell you, if you do end up in Chengdu as a West Aussie, whatever you do, don't feed the pandas. Just like the quokkas. Same rules for quokkas. Don't feed the quokkas. Don't feed the pandas.
Oh, something bad happened to a panda.
A tourist has made the mistake of throwing a corn cob into an enclosure with giant pandas.
At the zoo or something.
At the zoo in one of their special reserves. Banned for life. No panda for you. For the rest of your life.
Is the panda okay?
Panda's okay, apparently.
Okay, so not allowed to feed the pandas.
So a 65-year-old...
Don't they eat bamboo anyway?
Bamboo, mostly. So a 65-year-old has thrown the corn cob into a giant panda outdoor playground at the Panda Valley Reserve. It could have caused harm to the giant panda. Maybe it hit it in the eye or something. And also not good for its digestion.
Where was the tourist from?
Hard to say.
Okay.
A visitor.
A visitor. Not from Chengdu.
Would know better if you're from Chengdu. Everyone knows it.
Don't throw a corn cob at a panda.
No, they don't eat corn cobs. Their diets consist mostly of bamboo, leaves and stems and shoots of various bamboo species. They're not that fussy. And about 1% of their diet comprises other plants or even meat.
Oh, so meat as well.
I didn't know that. So there you go. And that's your panda news from the West Australian for Tuesday, May 9. And don't forget to subscribe to The West Live on your favourite podcast player. Matty, I'll talk to you tomorrow.
Will do. Have a great one, mate.
You've been listening to The West Live with Matt Tinney and Ben O'Shea.